A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 134. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time British horror television. And today we are continuing our discussion of Hammer House of Horror. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
Hammer House of Horror was a 1980 ITV series that ran for 13 51-minute episodes and was coming from the Hammer Film Studio, often known as Hammer Horror, because they were known for doing lots of British horror films in the late 50s and through the 60s and the 70s as well.
That's right. And here we have some modern settings for some of the Hammer traditional horror-themed stories. We've got lots of standard horror tropes, but sort of brought up to date for the 1980s. And as you say, Brian, we've got Hammer Horror, the studios, with their almost trademark style that they established during the 50s and 60s, which we talked about in some detail in our last episode. But we could sum it up as their gothic stories, lots of gore, and their scream queens, the sort of British version of a horror scream queen, and in particular, I guess, their heaving bosoms, which were lots are on display in their various vampire stories and so on. And here we have much the same, but now it's been brought up to date for a 1980 setting, so a sort of modernised version of what they were renowned for.
Yes, and I think this is more along the 1970s Hammer style of the heavier gore and the heaving bosoms and so on, where the 1960s ones were films that also had some of those things, but were a little spookier as well. They were a little bit different.
Yes, I guess so. It's, you know, as you say, it is slightly different to what they established their reputation for, but more in line with what was happening in the 70s and 80s, I guess.
Yes, I think that's about right. And you had lots of modern stylish couples with, you know, fancy cars and clothes and the sort of slick lifestyles of the time. Very sort of snazzy things you'd have in a lot of these episodes. And inevitably, the characters would run into some person or artifact or a place or a house that brings them into a horrific situation of some sort. And there is some sort of grim twist that comes at the end of things as well.
Okay, so in our last episode, we did promise that we would talk about one or two of the episodes in more detail. We did discuss the opening episode, Witching Hour, but let's get on to a few more of the standout episodes. And in particular, let's start with, I suppose, one of the more infamous episodes from Hammer House of Horror. And that's a story called The House That Bled to Death.
Ah, yes.
Yes, suitable title. And it's famous for one particular scene, which we'll get to in just a moment. But the setup is a sort of modern version of the haunted house. A young couple take on an abandoned and rather derelict house, but it's a sort of modern house on a modern-looking estate, and they are, in very sort of 80s aspirational fashion, they are going to do this house up and improve it. But of course, there's a series of strange events, and that leads them to discover, well, there's a gruesome past to this house, that something awful happened there in the past. And we may be getting some echoes of that happening to this young couple.
Yes, of course there is. And as we would have had in sort of older style haunted house stories, we would have lots of sort of spooky noises and creepy things happening. They went for the out-and-out gory horror much more in this, with the particular scene that is well-known, perhaps infamous, at a child's birthday party where, yes, the idea of the title, A House That Bled to Death, comes to the fore quite graphically. There is a great deal of blood involved.
There's an awful lot of blood at this children's birthday party from the house.
From the house itself, yes.
Yes. Probably the reddest blood you'll see on screen ever, I think, Brian.
Maybe, yeah.
It is very vibrant. It is a famous scene. It's the scene that does tend to get trotted out whenever this show is mentioned. And another television show, which I've mentioned in a few previous episodes, in 2003, Channel 4 television here in the UK ran a series called The 100 Scariest Moments. And they put this series, The Hammer House of Horror, at number 50 in their top 100. And of course, when they got to number 50, the clip they showed was indeed this birthday party where the house bleeds with very dramatic and horrifying effect. So it's a reasonably well-known clip. And if you've seen the Channel 4 show, you'll know exactly what we're talking about.
Yes, it's definitely one that's hard to miss.
And of course, as you've hinted at, Brian, and without wanting to give it away, there is a twist coming for this young couple. So everything is not quite as it seems, and then it gets more complicated.
Yes, that's right. And you have a surprise Blake 7 actor in that one, too. I won't tell you which one. Another interesting episode was Guardian of the Abyss, which is also sort of a classic horror-style show with the haunted object in this case, where it's a haunted mirror that is purchased at an antique sale. And there is, in fact, this strange cult that is, you know, involved in the occult and this sort of thing. And they are trying to get this mirror back from this sale and, you know, wherever it has gone. And there is a young woman who has escaped from them that they're trying to get back as well. So they have some very sort of dark and dangerous things going on there. In some ways, one of the spookier episodes, but some interesting things going on there as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you're familiar with any of the sort of British horror anthology films, you'll know this idea of buying a spooky artifact from an antique sale, which will go on to reveal itself as being something much more dark and sinister. And the mirror has been done before, but it's done quite well here. Interestingly, this episode was written by a Doctor Who writer, David Fisher, who I think wrote what would become the Doctor Who story, City of Death, although I know that had to be completed by Douglas Adams and others, I think, Brian.
Yes, he was one of about three writers involved in that, and it ended up being credited with the pseudonym.
Right, but a very famous Doctor Who story from the Fourth Doctor. And this episode, Guardian of the Abyss, also features another Blake 7. It's a suitably sinister Paul Darrow, who of course played Avon in Blake 7. And he's, I think, sufficiently nasty for this particular part, isn't he, Brian?
Yes, Paul Darrow can play sinister.
Yes, and he does so quite well here.
Yes, that was an interesting one, an unusual take on the haunted object that was just slightly different, and that was enjoyable. But we have to talk about one episode that was particularly interesting for its cast, but for other things as well.
That's right. If people talk about Hammer House of Horror, they will either mention The House That Bled to Death, or they'll mention an episode called The Silent Scream. The setup is that there's a reformed convict recently released from prison, played by Brian Cox. And he befriends an elderly pet shop owner, played by Peter Cushing. And Peter Cushing's character has some interesting views about captivity and animals in captivity and so on. And it becomes somewhat of a battle of wills between the two characters. And two great performances here, Brian.
Yes, the two of them were very good. And this was the episode where they got most into the psychological horror side of things. And they really went for that psychological horror and the idea of someone being psychologically terrorized, really. And they, of course, have lots of metaphors of animals being kept in captivity and convicts being kept in captivity in jails, and some relatively complex ideas there, and some really interesting stuff. That was an episode that was particularly well done and was well written and had some good ideas, and also had those two actors doing a great job playing off each other.
Yes, absolutely. It is probably the pick of the 13 episodes. And as you say, Brian, no witches or werewolves here. This is a different sort of horror. A couple of great performances, you know, an early Brian Cox, a late in his career Peter Cushing performance. And it's fantastic stuff, actually.
Yes, absolutely.
What is this? Some kind of suit?
I would prefer to call it my collection.
It must be worth a fortune.
It is.
Do you sell them?
No. I may when my work is complete.
What work is that, then?
Research into new methods of training.
What for? What is the point?
Open zoos or safari parks in the stately homes of England.
The cages. They're all open.
Exactly.
Were they safe?
Certainly. That is the point. Chuck, imagine. Zoos without cages. It must be possible. It is possible. To contain an animal without bars. Now, surely you can see the benefit of that.
Tame, are they?
Oh, no, they are not tame. These are wild animals.
But how? How did you get them?
I caught them.
You caught them?
It only takes the right bait.
So we should talk a little bit about the legacy of Hammer House of Horror, and in particular, what was done a few years later. Because it was a successful series. It was networked in the US. It was played and did quite well. And it is actually quite well remembered and was sort of something that people continued to know about after it was broadcast.
Yeah, as you say, well remembered. I wonder if that's possibly by an audience who may have been slightly too young at the time when they first saw it. And certainly in our Facebook discussion on this show, we like to post a thread about each show as we're coming up to them. And in the Facebook group, I think Wayne and Jeff both commented that they remembered this show from when they were quite young and how much it scared them at the time. So, you know, it is a well-remembered show, various moments that really stick in people's memories. And it was, as you say, successful. And so much so that Hammer went on to make a sequel series, but this time it was in America, in association with 20th Century Fox, and they produced a series in 1984 called Hammer House of Mystery and Suspense, although I gather in North America that was called Fox Mystery Theater. I think that's right, Brian.
And again, they did one 13-episode series, and it was with a longer running time. They ran about 70 minutes for each episode, so it was sort of a movie of the week sort of thing for Fox. And it had a mostly American cast, and they toned down the nudity and the violence in it, but they did keep those twist-ending sorts of themes that they had in Hammer House of Horror.
And interestingly, two of the episodes in the sequel series were remakes of episodes from an earlier British science fiction series, the BBC's Out of the Unknown, and in particular from the fourth series of Out of the Unknown, which ran in 1971. And the episode Last Witness became A Distant Scream, and another episode called The Uninvited was remade as In Possession. So connections with a show that may be coming up quite soon on British Invaders.
Yes, indeed. So we have episodes from a BBC show being remade for an American show that is a co-production of the British Hammer Company. So a little bit of a convoluted process, but interesting stuff there. Those two episodes from Out of the Unknown are actually both missing, so unfortunately, we can't do the comparison there, but sort of interesting that they did those. And I think that was one of the last things that Hammer did until the company was sort of brought back and revived in 2007. Hammer, I think, basically went under or went dormant in the 1980s and was revived in 2007. And one of the most well-known things that the new revived Hammer Studios has done is The Woman in Black in 2011, which we've also talked about on British Invaders.
That's right, not all that long ago. And it's interesting to see Hammer resurgent again, because as we know, The Woman in Black is now, I believe, the highest grossing British horror film of all time, and is set for a sequel. So clearly a success for Hammer. They're back.
Yes, it's good to see them back. And we should note that the sequel series, Hammer House of Mystery and Suspense, was released on DVD, but that DVD set is now deleted, and it's quite expensive to find it used.
That's right. So we haven't actually watched the sequel series, and it also, I think, might qualify as an American rather than British series. Plus, as you say, Brian, very difficult to get hold of now. So we've been watching the original 13 episodes, and I guess it's time for us to start talking about the good, the bad, and the horror of the Hammer House of Horror 13 episodes, and what we liked and didn't like so much about this show, Brian.
Well, it's an interesting one to talk about for this, because this is an anthology series. There are episodes that are unrelated, so it's almost like we're talking about 13 completely separate productions. And this is only the second time we've talked about an anthology series on British Invaders. We talked about Beasts quite some time ago, which was also a horror anthology series, but more into the psychological horror. And this is a little bit more into the classic monster horror, although it ranges quite a bit. And I would say it's something of a mixed bag. Some of the episodes I really enjoyed. The Silent Scream was a fantastic bit of psychological horror.
Yes, absolutely. It is variable. We have got some good stories in here and some good writing and good productions. I found that some of the twist endings were a little bit easy to spot, and I saw some of them come in. The Silent Scream episode does seem to be the pick of the bunch, as you say, Brian. I mean, it is fantastic to see Peter Cushing and Brian Cox in this battle, this psychological battle of wills. And that's great stuff. Some of the other episodes, in particular, when they sink into rather traditional monster mode, is less good. I think in the first episode I mentioned the actress Diana Dawes, and the episode she appears in, which is quite clearly from the start the werewolf episode, that sank into more traditional sort of monster movie fare for me, and I wasn't really as good as I'd hoped.
Yes, I can see that. Although I have to say the werewolf transformation in that episode was maybe my favorite werewolf transformation I've seen.
Oh, right. Okay.
Just because it was done in a fairly subtle thing where you didn't see too much. You're right. They definitely sink into sort of typical monster movie tropes at times. And those can be a little bit dull when they show up in this sort of one-hour form.
Yes, they are strangely dull, as you say, in those episodes. You know, there's bits and pieces where the tension is great, and then there's other bits where really it gets a little bit dull and repetitive watching it. I think it looks quite good for the time, for 1980, but it does seem quite dated now. And the sort of style, the houses, the cars, it all looks a bit strange to our eyes. And I found it interesting. I mean, we've mentioned Beasts, comparing it with similar shows from the time, Beasts and another show we talked about, perhaps Casting the Runes from a similar time period. I think they've perhaps aged better than this has, Brian.
Yes, I think that's a fair thing to say. There was an episode of this that dealt with dreams and sort of the confusion between dreams and reality. And it was very dated. It was one that I liked just because I like that theme, and I thought the theme was used reasonably well. It was not one of the strongest episodes in this, and not a terribly strong production in many respects, but it was something that I rather enjoyed because it used some of those elements fairly cleverly.
Okay. Yeah, interesting. As we've mentioned a few times as we're going through, this was an adult sort of orientated late night show. So there is sex and gore in there. I have to say I found quite a lot of it to be rather gratuitous. And again, doesn't seem to have aged very well. It does seem a little bit strange.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It does, I think, and I've said this before, but it really feels like a mixed bag in the sense that you have some productions in here that are really quite strong, and you have some that are sort of mediocre and not that interesting, and you have some that are sort of a mix of not always being the strongest in their performances and their writing, but have some really good moments in them.
Yes, I mean, yes, that's right. There are some moments. And of course, as we've said, as we've gone along, there are some great actors in there. You know, we've got some very recognizable genre faces and names that keep cropping up. And it's nice to see them in something other than what we, you know, what they're famous for. So it is nice to see Paul Darrow and Gareth Thomas and people like that. Kevin Stoney, I mean, another great actor from Doctor Who. Yeah. So, yeah, you know, it's great to see these people. It's just a pity that the stuff they're given is not perhaps quite so good.
In some cases, yeah. I did like the episode that Gareth Thomas was in. It had a nice sort of awesome feel to it, and I liked some of the tension they brought in.
Good.
And the Angela Bruce episode was also pretty strong, I thought.
Okay. So there are episodes there that do stand out and are worth watching. As a whole, I mean, again, it's difficult to judge it as a whole, but is it scary enough for a horror show, do you think, Brian?
Oh, I don't know. I'm less of a horror fan than you are, Eamon. It's a different style, I guess, but it's so variable that it's hard to pin that down. Perhaps it isn't scary enough for a horror anthology series, at least in the style that they do them now.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I would agree with that. I could have done with less gore and more scare, and you know, the psychological horror of the Peter Cushing episode, the silent scream, is perhaps the best moment in terms of scares, I think. But okay, interesting stuff. As you can tell, an anthology series with some ups and downs along the way, which I suppose is typical of an anthology, really.
Yes, indeed. So that brings us to our recommendations. So, Eamon, what do you think? Would you recommend this?
Well, it's been a while since we've had a dud, Brian. But this was a bit of a dud for me, this one, I'm afraid. I found most of it not to be quite up to the standard I was expecting, and certainly not as scary as I was hoping. My recommendation, I think, would be to go and watch the episode The Silent Scream on YouTube, and perhaps to compare it with the episode, if you remember that, during Barty's Party, which is the Rats episode of Beasts.
Oh, interesting.
As two great moments of sort of psychological terror on television. And if you do choose to compare those, please report back on the Facebook group. But in terms of whether you would buy this series, I personally would say go and buy Beasts by Nigel Neal.
Oh, interesting.
Yourself.
I'm going to give this a bit more of a positive spin. I thought as a series as a whole, it was okay. It was kind of fun. If you want something that is sort of a fun bit of horror from its time, it's okay. I certainly won't give it a strong recommendation. I think it had a handful of good episodes in it, certainly including The Silent Scream and Guardians of the Abyss. Also, one or two others. all in all, I would say this was okay. It was so-so. So you might want to check it out if you are interested in Hammer horror and interested in horror television from the late 70s or early 80s.
Okay. And as ever, if you've seen it or if you watch it as a result of our reviews, please let us know what you think. If I'm wrong about it being a dud, then please let me know on the Facebook group. And also, you know, compare and contrast perhaps with, I keep saying it, Nigel Neal's Beasts.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, let us know what you think. If you remember seeing this when it was new and you've come back and watched it more recently, we'd love to hear about how it held up for you.
Absolutely.
So, in summary, Hammer House of Horror was a horror anthology series that ran for 13 episodes on ITV in 1980. It covered a variety of classic horror-style shows with monster movie type things and haunted house and haunted object types of stories and a little bit of psychological horror thrown in for good measure as well.
Okay, and as ever, as we say, come and tell us what you thought. An interesting bit of diversion into the horror genre for us here on British Invaders.
Yes, we don't do that too often, but it's nice to do that every once in a while.
And it will be coming up again, but next time we are switching back firmly to the science fiction genre, and we are in fact going back to discuss that BBC show we mentioned earlier, Out of the Unknown, which ran for four series between 1965 and 1971. And if you have an interest in written science fiction stories and novels, you're going to want to come back and listen to that, our review, because there's some great science fiction names attached to this series, Brian.
Yes, they did adaptations of a number of classic short stories, sometimes novels as well, but a great deal of short stories from, you know, early to mid 20th century sci-fi authors. And again, that will be us taking a look at an anthology series again. So that should be interesting. There's some good stuff to talk about for that one.
Very good.
So you can reach us at BritishInvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at www.BritishInvaders.com. We have a Facebook group, so if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find us there, and we have some discussions going about the things we've covered there as well. We are part of the Geek Culture Network, so if you go to thegeekculturenetwork.com, you can find us there. You can find some other podcasts there as well. And we are also now streaming on Voice of Geeks, the VOG Network. And if you go to vognetwork.com, you can hear us streaming once or twice a week there as well.
And hello to new listeners who've met us through the VOG Network.
Absolutely. Glad you can join us. So, thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, thank you very much for joining us, and until next time, this is Eamon in England saying, it's hammer time.